Stevens, reel 2.
Can you tell us who your commanders were in India?
Do you mean top commanders or...?
Well, let's start with the top commanders.
Well, the one in Waziristan was General Pope. And then my major was then in charge. Major Roberts was my commander in Waziristan with the signals. And when I went up on the frontier, there was a captain in charge of my section, and I became the sergeant major then.
Mm-hmm. You say it was General Pope.
Yeah.
You're saying in Waziristan. What year was that?
That was in 1929. Mm-hmm.
What did the men think of him as a commander?
Oh, they liked him very much. He was a great sport, really. He used to attend all the sports and that the units had round about. He attend all sports and he was a great general.
What did the men think of the quality of the leadership generally?
I think our major in particular, he was a great one. He treated everyone well. Disciplinarian, yes. Well, he had to be. But he was good where the families were concerned. He used to visit the families often to see that they were okay.
He looked after his men.
He looked after his men, yes. Oh, yes.
Were there any commanders who were not liked? Do you remember?
No, I don't know of one. Not from the lowest subordinate, right up the top ranks. I never met anyone who was not liked. Hmm.
Could we say something about any campaigns which you were in? Did you ever take part in any campaigns?
In the 1930-31 operations.
Which operations were those?
That was in Razmak, from Razmak north, up on the northwest frontier.
Was this operations... Who were the operations against?
The tribesmen, Waziristan.
And did you see action?
Oh, yes. I went out on the column. I went out on a column out with the Durham Light Infantry was out, and I was out with the signals, communications.
How did the operations go? Were they successful?
Oh, very successful, yes. They didn't last too long. The political agent... for about 6 weeks, I should think, they lasted. And then they would quieten down for a period, and then some other little event would crop up.
How did the troops get on in the fighting against the tribesmen, the Wazirs? Did they find it difficult to fight them?
Oh, these tribesmen are very, very cute, and they were difficult to be located, very difficult to be located.
You were telling me earlier about some orders you got about giving some punishment to those tribesmen. Can you tell me about that again?
Oh, that was a case when I was in charge of the wireless in Razmak camp itself, and a message was received and handed to me that tribesmen were attacking Datakau Fort The North Waziristan scouts held that post. And this message was an operational message, and I sent it to the CO, who sent a message to Whitehall, what action to be taken. And the message received back was, proceed to Datakal, inflict punishment on the enemy and return to camp. We were always ready to go out on column within half an hour, and we proceeded out on column this 15 mile, about 15 miles to Datakal Fort. On arrival, we found that the tribesmen were as far the other side as we'd already gone. So there was no action necessary. We then returned to our camp.
So it was anything but easy to inflict punishment on the...
Oh, yes.
Wazir tribesmen.
Oh, they were so cute. How they used to get their information, one never knows, but they used to contact each other, I think. All over the frontier, you see. They used to get in bunches and things like that, but they would snipe you at night. You see, if you went out on column, you were doing a column, you would get to a position and put stones all around as a perimeter, you see. Then you get down with your animals, your mules and that, and then during the night you'd get sniped. Sometimes they'd catch a mule, but it's very seldom they got any people, any soldiers or anything. But we used to get down fully dressed with in amongst these rocks and that. That was it for the night.
So the tribesmen seem to have very good intelligence of your movements. They seem to know what you were going to do.
Oh yes, I should think that they got it, from person to person, from tribesman to tribesman, kind of thing. You see, they were always about. They were round about your camp the whole time, all over the frontier. You had them, and until they got into a group kind of thing. You see.
You said that it was very difficult to spot the enemy.
Yeah.
Did you actually ever see them? Did you ever see one of the enemy?
Oh, we used to see them when they used to come in. They'd been captured afterwards. Well, the political agent used to find them after the operation, and they were fined by so many rifles. They had to bring in so many rifles, you see, you could see them all squat round when they used to have a parley, and a political agent there, and he would say, now you're fined so many rifles. And all these rifles were collected and they've taken off them, you see. That was more or less their punishment.
So it was the village that was fined, or an individual who was fined?
All individuals. Uh-huh. All individuals, all tribesmen with their arms and that. And they... You see, they used to bring them in. The political agent, you see, was a person who used to get around amongst them. He had his own bodyguard with tribesmen. He used to get around amongst them and everything. He knew quite a lot that was going on.
Was he an Englishman?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He was known as a political agent, you see. And he... usually ranked as a major.
But how could, if an individual tribesman had been fined, how on earth could he get hold of five rifles if he'd been fined five rifles?
Not individual. All the lot of them would bring their rifle in, you see. An old group of them would be all squat around with all their rifles in the centre, and each one's rifle was taken off him.
Punishment. You mentioned the frontier scouts. Who were they?
They were something like police. Would be here, police in the frontier, but they were all in uniform. And they had a like a, a fort affair. See, and they were in this fort, and they were all armed by the British government, and yet they were like a police force.
Were they Indian troops?
Oh yes, they were all Indian, and usually a British in charge, British officers in charge.
Were these Indian troops from the Northwest Frontier Province or what?
Oh yes. They were all from the Northwest Frontier Province and, well, all around about that area, and they were used to that type of country, you see, for tribal country.
Did the British manage to get any of the tribesmen to operate against the rebel tribesmen?
Well, the political officer, they would get all that information. That's where it all came from. He used to get information from other tribesmen. Oh yes, the other tribe. He used to get, because he had a like a bodyguard of people, of tribesmen themselves, who were more or less loyal, and they used to get amongst them, and they used to get all the information from.
Did they have a special name, this bodyguard?
No, they were just. Just a bodyguard with him. He knew them all, of course.
Were tribesmen ever given arms by the British to use against other tribesmen?
Only as guards on the roads. They were known as Kasadars and that. And they were...
Kasadars.
And they used to protect the main roads and that leading to the frontier. And... you could see them as you went up the hills, up in these mountains. You would see them squatting on the side with their rifle, and they used to look as dangerous as any tribesmen themselves. But they were quite loyal. They were given ammunition and the old 1914 type Lee Enfield rifle.
Were they any good?
Oh yes, they were all right. We never used to get any trouble, really, all that amount of trouble going up the hills. We used to have to keep our eye open, but I think I told you before that you weren't armed unless there was six or more. You wouldn't go up in a vehicle if it was less than six.
What was the reason for that?
Well, they probably attack you, you see, and they do anything to get hold of rifles. And if there was less than six, that of course you could be overwhelmed or anything or the other, you see, and they'd take your arms. They'd do anything to get hold of rifles. These tribesmen. But we never used to be allowed under six with arms. Mm.
What did you think of the enemy, the Pathan tribesmen, as fighters?
Oh, well, what should I say? They seemed to have no value of life. They had no value of life. They think they were going to the old happy hunting grounds, I think, if they were killed or anything like that, but... They would do such horrible things, and one thing and the other roundabout. They would use dum-dum bullets, and one thing and the other, you see. And if a dum-dum bullet, I don't know if you know what I mean by a dum-dum bullet, it's split at the top and it'll whistle so much that it'll tear your flesh to pieces, won't it? Well, that's the kind of thing they would do.
And so you thought that they were reckless of their own lives?
Oh, yes.
And also you thought they were cruel as well, did you?
Oh, they were. Oh, they were.
Is this the reputation which they had?
Well, they always had that reputation, of course. Yeah.
So did they seem to hate the British? Or was that
it? Well, they always seem to be so sly in their methods and one thing and the other. You see, even when there's no operations on, you could see them, they'd sort of eye you as they went past and one thing and the other. You would think it was hatred kind of thing, you see. It'd give you that experience kind of thing, that they hated the sight of you kind of thing as they passed you. And yet they would walk on quite harmless.
What did you ever find out what the relationship of the Indian troops was with the Pathan tribesmen?
Well, as a matter of fact, we had Pathans and that in some of the troops and that who were loyal, you see. And the relationship generally were, I think that they were so disciplined that when they were with the British and that, they were so disciplined that they would, well, they, I think that if their own brother was a tribesman, they would have shot him. That's the kind of thing that they were so disciplined, you see.
So being in the Indian Army completely transformed them,
didn't it? Did the
Sikhs and the Punjabi troops get on with the Pathans all right? Or was there any hostility between them?
There was never any hostilities, not generally, amongst troops and others. Never any hostilities.
At this time, you're talking about the frontier, about 1930-31.
Yeah.
At the same time, there was the non-cooperation movement going on, the civil disobedience movement.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Did you see anything of that?
Yes, well, there was civil disobedience when I was in the artillery at Firozpur. I think I mentioned Firozpur once before when I was there with a battery of artillery.
That was in the United Provinces.
That was in the United Provinces, yes. And we had our, during civil disobedience there, we had our guns trained on Firozpur City in case of any disturbance. We had 6-inch, 30-under weight guns, medium artillery, and all around the fort, and the guns were trained on Firozpur City in case of any disturbance. And we were more or less confined to the fort for 2 or 3 days at a time, you know.
Did you see any disturbances taking place?
No, never. They used to get excited during celebrations and those kind of things, and we'd just stand to for
religious celebrations.
Yeah. Religious celebration. Eid was one, I believe. ID, isn't it? Eid.
Yes.
Yeah, we used to stand by for in case of anything like that. But
what made the army think that there was going to be trouble at Firozpur with the civil disobedience movement? Was there a lot of evidence of that there was going to be trouble there? Why did they get that idea?
Because of the festivities that were going on and that, and they used to prepare for them. Because it was recognised that if these elements more or less meet, that's Muslims and Hindus and that, once they meet and there's just a bit of a disturbance, then it usually turns out bigger than it.
Yes. That was the religious festivals.
But yes.
This business with the guns being trained on Firozpur.
That was during the
was a civil disobedience
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Was Firozpur, was there a lot of civil disobedience there at the time?
No.
Can you remember?
No. No. But it was happening generally all over India when these civil disobedience.
Could we talk about Oh, were those the only operations you saw, the frontier and civil disobedience, or were there any other operations you can remember in India in your time?
No, I can't remember any other operations.
Well, can we talk about the life in the barracks next?
Yeah.
What were your barracks like in the different stations you're in India?
Oh, barracks, good. Good, strong, brick-built barracks. Like double-decker barracks. Large barracks for... We had... In Rawalpindi, for instance, we had two of these big buildings, barrack buildings, about 100 yards apart, and they took about 250 troops each. And the Indians would be in one, you know, and the British in another kind of thing, you see.
What do you mean by double-decker? Do you mean two stories?
Two stories, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Those two of them double-decker, don't you? Yeah.
And how did you keep cool? Did you have fans?
Yes. When I went out first, it was the punkah. And that was... and they used to have the old Indian pulling a rope, sometimes on his toe, moving his toe, pulling the punkahs, you know, and the old punkah going back and forward. That was shade. And then they used to have, like, straw mat things over the doors and that, and they used to throw water on those.
What did they call those straw mats?
That's what I can tell you at the moment, what they were. They were...
They weren't called chatties, were they?
Pardon?
They weren't called chatties, were they?
Oh, no, chatties was the water containers, wasn't it? A chatty was a water container.
Uh-huh.
We used to have those by the bed with a... Because that used to keep our water cool, didn't it?
A special container to keep the water...
Yeah.
What was it made out of?
Drinking water. It was like porcelain.
Porcelain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you had these mats with the water sprinkled on
them. The big mat, they'd be as big as that fireplace, for instance. Mm. And that would go right over the door, you see.
Sort of about 5 foot high.
Easily 5 foot, yes. Yeah. 5 to 6 foot. And it was like rushes and straw and things like that sort of bound in it. And then they used to throw water. And if there was any breeze at all, that used to keep the place cool, you see.
Cool the air as it came through the mat.
Yes. Yeah. And then the old punker used to keep it moving.
When did they replace the punkahs with fans? Were they sort of electric fans in their own?
Oh, yes, they were electric. They were more or less in the bigger barracks. They were all fitted up, electric.
When did they change them?
Let me see. I should think about 1923-24.
Which were the most effective for keeping you cool?
Oh, the fan.
Much better than the fan?
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes. The old punker used to squeak and whatnot, you know, and they'd be going all night with the old native outside, and this native pulled him. He used to get tired and that, and he used to doze off sometimes. And someone used to say, "Kinch!"
What does it mean?
Make him to work.
Get Kinch. Weaving.
Yeah, Kinch, they used to shout to him. And, of course, no one kind language, I'll tell you, that he used to use to them. And, of course, then he used to wake up and he used to work again then. Because if the fan stopped, it'd be almost murder, you know.
So Kinch meant get working?
Yeah.
How did the barracks compare with the barracks in England? Were they better or worse?
Well, they were all shuttered because they were all shuttered out there because of sandstorms. Now, you could see a sandstorm coming in the distance, you know. Your sky was sort of yellow. And immediately you saw that, you were saying, well, we're in for a sandstorm. And, of course, all the windows and shutters and your doors and that were all could all be closed to keep the sand and that out, you know. And it used to be stifling when they used to come home. But immediately after a sandstorm, you know, immediately after a sandstorm, it would come on to rain. And a terrific downpour. And of course, immediately the dust was laid, you see, and we used to run out in a pair of shorts in this rain. It used to be beautiful.
So you used to look forward to the monsoon coming, did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Coming back to the question I asked you earlier about the barracks, is it possible to say whether the barracks in India were better or worse than in England?
Oh, the barracks themselves were not so compact, I shouldn't think, as barracks in England. What I mean, the rooms were bigger, and there were more troops than that in one big room, for instance, than there would be in this country, where you'd get a smallish room with perhaps 6 or 8 beds. You get somewhere about 40, 50 beds in one particular room.
In the Indian barracks?
In the Indian barracks, yeah.
Whereas there'd only be a handful of 6
only
or 8.
Only a handful. And there'd be fans, there'd be beds either side, you see, all down the barracks. And then there'd be about one fan between 2 beds. And this fan would be belting it down, you know. Wouldn't be very, not very high above you. But the building was quite high, you know.
What about the rations which you got? Were they satisfactory, do you think, or not?
Well, when I went to India first, we were given a ration allowance. We were given a ration allowance when I went out first. And we were paying somewhere about a rupee, 8 annas, that's 1.5 rupees,